What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Wages and benefits have been climbing as the job market tightens. How a new law requiring New York City employers to post salaries could make things even more competitive.
I think the thinking is that the more information that job seekers have, the better. The more that they can sort of go into negotiations with companies on more of an equal playing field.
Plus, the cat's out of the bag. There's a new pet at the White House. It's Friday, January 28th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Employers spent 4% more on wages and benefits last year, hikes not seen since 2001. That's putting more money in workers' pockets. Average hourly wages rose 4.7% in December from a year earlier, according to the Labor Department. But although wages are climbing across sectors, from high-paying finance jobs to lower-paying restaurant and manufacturing positions, in many cases, it hasn't been enough to keep pace with rising prices. Inflation recently hit its fastest rate in nearly four decades. Coming up later in the show, we'll talk about how new laws for pay transparency could impact businesses and workers' salaries later this year. President Biden visited the site of a collapsed bridge in Pittsburgh, where 10 people were injured earlier today. The visit coincided with a planned trip to the city to tout his $1 trillion infrastructure law.
And we're going to rebuild that bridge, along with thousands of other bridges in Pennsylvania and across the country, because it's in our interest, for our own safety's sake.
The nearly 450-foot-long bridge was built in the early 1970s and was graded as poor on inspections from 2011 through 2017, according to National Bridge Inventory data. The National Transportation Secretary said the agency is sending a team to investigate the cause of the accident. The House committee investigating the January 6th Capitol riot has subpoenaed more than a dozen people in seven states, including Arizona and Georgia, who tried to submit false slates of electors as part of an effort to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Pro-Trump electors were put forward in those states to cast symbolic votes for the former president in the hopes they'd be accepted by Congress. In a letter, the committee's chair, Representative Benny Thompson, said lawmakers want to understand how alternate electors met and who was behind what he called a scheme. U.S. stocks ended a roller coaster week with a rally. All three major indexes ended the day with gains. The Dow was up 565 points. The S&P 500 snapped a three-week losing streak. For the week, the Dow was up 1.3%, the S&P 500 was up 0.8%, the Nasdaq was roughly flat. A major storm expected to bring strong winds and heavy snow to much of the East Coast could develop into a powerful nor'easter today. The National Weather Service expects between 6 and 12 inches of snow from the eastern shore of Maryland up through most of Maine, and says blizzard conditions could make travel dangerous in many areas on Saturday. Emergency officials and state leaders are urging residents to monitor the weather and stay off the roads. And Delta has reclaimed the top spot in the Wall Street Journal's 14th annual ranking of U.S. airlines, while JetBlue finished last. Delta was the best in five of seven categories, including cancellation rates. It canceled just over 0.5% of scheduled flights, well below the average of 1.8%. JetBlue was worst on extreme delays. Airlines have been dealing with a host of challenges this year, from staffing shortages that increased during the Omicron surge to weather interruptions. Those issues brought Southwest down to third from first place the year before. So, what lessons have airlines learned? Here's our travel reporter, Allison Poley.
They've learned the importance of staffing, especially with the emergence of variants. So a lot of the airlines I spoke to have emphasized how they are hiring more staff to make sure that they can run their schedules into this year, and especially in summer of 2022 when demand is expected to be high. They're also taking a look at their schedule to make sure that they're not running too ambitiously. They still want to meet demand, of course, but want to make sure that they have the staff in place so they aren't canceling flights.
Coming up, how including salaries on job postings could impact hiring and job hunting.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Job postings can leave a lot of information out, including how much they pay. But that's about to change in New York City. Under a new law that goes into effect this spring, employers will be required to disclose salary ranges on job postings. The rule comes at a time when companies are spending more to attract workers in a tight labor market. And there's been some pushback against the new law from business groups. Joining me now to talk about the new rule is Wall Street Journal workplace reporter Chip Cutter. Hi, Chip. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Emery. Thanks very much.
So let's start off with the basics. What exactly does this rule require companies to disclose, and are there any penalties for not doing so?
So this is a pretty sweeping law. It will require all companies, essentially, you know, those with more than four employees in New York, to disclose the minimum and maximum salary for pay on all of their job listings. So think about sort of the variety of companies that operate in New York. It's everyone from companies like Goldman Sachs and Google to hedge funds and law firms and many others. So we'll suddenly get a window into sort of how these companies pay just from their job postings. And there are penalties for this. Basically, there could be civil fines, civil penalties, damages for those that don't comply. New York City authorities have told me that essentially at first they'll mostly be trying just to kind of educate employers on how to comply with this. They won't really be seeking those penalties at first, but there is room for the city to levy fines if they wanted to do so.
Who's behind the push for this transparency effort? What do supporters say?
Yes. So the city council members who proposed this wanted to kind of close gaps in gender pay gaps that have existed, and they wanted to provide just greater pay transparency. And this follows sort of a movement we're beginning to see across the country, where Colorado, for example, put in a new law that went into effect last year requiring salaries on every job posting in Colorado. We've seen other sort of pay disclosure laws, you know, taking effect in places like Connecticut and Rhode Island. So these are sort of gaining traction in more places. And I think the thinking is that the more information that job seekers have, the better, the more that they can sort of go into negotiations with companies on more of an equal playing field. And so I think that they just want to try to put this information out there to try to kind of close these gaps and give people more room to sort of negotiate with some added information.
So we know we're in a very tight labor market right now. Employees have a lot more leverage, and employers are trying to meet them by offering higher salaries and incentives. But they're also fighting inflation, too. In fact, as we mentioned earlier in the show, employers spent 4% more on wages and benefits last year. What are you hearing from companies about the higher costs they're facing and how this law might impact their challenges?
It's really interesting. I mean, the topic of inflation and wage inflation in particular comes up in almost every conversation I have with CEOs. I mean, many sort of make the obvious point that it's hard to sort of claw back pay raises, that once you raise someone's salary, they're sort of making that salary and they're not going to make less. And so it is a challenge, I think, for companies, and it is something a lot of executives are thinking about. And this law would give job seekers and employees even more of an upper hand in sort of the job market right now, given this tight labor market. And this would just sort of give them a little more power to sort of negotiate, to have leverage and options as they think about this. And I think it's important to note that this also helps existing employees, because existing employees will sort of be able to see the open job postings at their companies, and they can get a sense of where they might fall on the range. So labor attorneys are already, you know, sort of warning bosses and managers, you know, get ready for your employees to come to you and say, like, why am I not higher on this range? I saw this open job. Why do I not do better in sort of this range? And so I think it just does give employees, you know, whether they're in a company or looking for new work, a little extra power here.
So let's talk about the pushback against this new law. What are you hearing from companies and business groups who are opposing this measure? And what recourse do they have to do that?
Well, I think for starters, many companies were sort of surprised by this. I think a lot of them sort of didn't know this legislation was sort of making its way through city council. They weren't necessarily watching this. And so then when it, you know, passed city council in December and then ended up going into being enacted in January after New York Mayor Eric Adams decided not to veto this, I think a lot of employers were sort of startled by this and surprised by it. And the pushback has been strong. One of the city's most prominent business groups, the Partnership for New York City, has said that they just think this law law is the wrong solution. The partnership represents big employers in New York, and it says that, you know, it supports efforts to kind of close gender pay gaps. It supports efforts for greater transparency. But they have said that they think this is really burdensome for companies. The case that business groups are making is that not every company has salary bands for every existing job title, that sometimes it's a little fuzzier, and they'll sort of negotiate once they have a sense of who they really want for a job. And so there has been a push, and I think there will be a push, to try to push back the implementation date for this. It's supposed to go into effect May 15th. The partnership has said it plans to ask for that to be delayed, but it's sort of unclear if that will be successful.
How are job recruiters viewing this? Do they think it's likely to attract more talent to New York City, already a huge talent pool here and a big economy?
So recruiters are mixed on this. They say that it actually could help by creating a more efficient job search process. So I think there's oftentimes that dance that goes on when you're negotiating for a job or for pay, where you don't really know sort of how low or how high to ask for the salary. You don't really know exactly what the job might pay. So you might go through multiple interview steps and then realizing at the end of a job search process that this job doesn't pay anything close to what they were expecting. So I think that when recruiters talk about this, they say that that might be sort of one element that they would like. But I think a lot of recruiters are nervous about this. A lot of HR executives and others have operated for a long time sort of not disclosing pay and keeping pay very private. And I think that they're sort of a little bit nervous about what this might mean and how they'll have to change their operations. At the same time, there's been a push for greater pay equity. A lot of companies have done pay equity audits. They've sort of tried to sort of get their pay bands in line and so that they can explain them to employees. But I think many are sort of wary of this and just nervous about sort of what it might mean or how it might change the job search process. So I think a lot are sort of kind of waiting to see what happens here.
And what about from job seekers? You spoke to them as well. How do they feel about this new law?
Yeah, many are excited about it and sort of cautiously optimistic about it. I spoke with one person who applied for about 300 jobs, he said, in New York last year. And he gave an example of one experience. He said he sort of went through multiple interviews. He ended up getting a job offer at a company. And the pay that the company ended up offering him was about half of what he was expecting. And he said it was just a waste of everyone's time. It was a waste of his time going through multiple interviews. And it was a waste of the company's time, too, because he wasn't going to be interested in that job. And so he said he's hopeful that basically having this information would have just prevented him from applying for that job in the first place if he sort of knew what the range was for it. And I think a lot of job seekers would sort of relate to that. But at the same time, you know, I think one question is how big do the ranges get that companies give? It's, you know, one thing for a company to say this job pays between $100,000 and $125,000. It's another for a company to offer between $50,000 and $500,000. I mean, that is just sort of, I think, probably less informative to job seekers because it's hard to sort of know where you might fall on that. The city requires companies to post good faith ranges to be realistic about this, and we'll sort of see how companies comply.
That's Wall Street Journal workplace reporter Chip Cutter. Chip, thanks so much for joining me.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Anne-Marie.
And finally, the dogs have had their day, but for the first time in a while, a cat is now in the White House. First Lady Jill Biden revealed pictures of their gray and white short-haired tabby Willow on Twitter today. By this afternoon, it had already been liked more than 150,000 times. Our reporter Allison Prang says there's been a long history of pets in the White House.
There is something called the Presidential Pet Museum, which maybe some people might not believe, but Abraham Lincoln, back in the 1800s, actually had cats. His cats included two that were named Dixie and Tabby. That's what I can tell you. It's kind of fun for people to go look on this website. You know, you can see people have had, presidents have had parrots, or I think there was a mention of an alligator. You know, it's not just run-of-the-mill dogs and cats that we would, you know, imagine as typical household pets.
And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Luke Vargas. The show was produced by Trinae Nuri and Kate Bullivant, with help from Mohsen Ali, Anthony Bansi, Julie Chang, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen, and editorial support from Kateri Yoakum, Sandra Kilhoff, and Chris Sinsley. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.